Yes. Joella Sparks.
Maria Russell. Robert Mackey. Evelyn Pinsgard. Sarah Batiste. Deb Jepson.
Here.
Stacey Houdeshell. Mary Alice Short. Debbie Gonzalez.
Here.
Kayla Hansen. Sean Houston.
Here.
Carolyn Simmons.
Here.
Deb Coxon.
Here.
Gary Newman.
Here.
Jennifer Elhart. Louisa Hayes. Mary Sue Date. Claudia Coach Goddard. Jennifer Ward.
Present.
Myanna Bean. Ryan Keel. Kim Eames. Heather Lavengood. Eric Ofelt. Robin Wyman. John Clendenin. Jennifer Youngberg.
Here.
Walker Wheeler.
Brad Crick.
Here.
Kat Williams. Travis Brinzo.
Here.
Richard Machida. Gary Bender.
Here.
Britton Anderson. Is there anybody else whose name wasn't called?
This is Jennifer Elhard, Unit 6.
Okay, well, Nicole's looking for whether we have a quorum or not. Let's move on, and we'll look at the agenda. Has everybody had a time to look at that? I feel so far away from you guys, way over there. These seats.
Quorum was met.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. If the agenda looks good, I take a motion to approve.
This is Gary. I'll make a motion to approve.
Gary will second. Okay, any opposition? Seeing none, we'll move on to the minutes. I think online maybe both the November minutes were sent out twice instead of the November and December. So we'll approve the November minutes and hold off on the December minutes until next meeting.
This is Gary. I'll second.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. And we'll have the December minutes for you next month. We have no actions that are pending right now, so we can move on to public comment. I know Ann Ringstad's on the phone joining us from Juneau. Ann, are you there?
Well, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you fine. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, I'll take my speaker off. I hear you really loud.
Okay, I'll move back a little.
No, it's just me. I'm just calling from Juneau, snowy Juneau. I managed to get in yesterday. It was wonderful. We've had about a foot of snow down here, which is really wonderful. First of all, I want to thank everyone in staff council who has participated in advocacy efforts for the university over the years. You know what this process is all about. You know it takes a lot of work, and the more you can get from your membership as far as vocal support, the better, and you know who you are. But thank you very much. We are in day 7 of a 90-day session, and it goes fairly rapidly. I can tell you there's a number of bills that are on for discussion, including one on student loan interest reductions that was introduced by a couple of minority members. Also, two of them on military training credit for education and also licensing. One is up in the Senate State Affairs Committee this morning, and one will be up in the House Education Committee on Friday. And Chris Christensen, who is the new university statewide lobbyist, will be testifying on it, and he is in Juneau for the whole session, keeping an eye on all things university. As far as the budget goes, you know, the regents introduced their budget. It was presented to the governor on December 15th. The governor chose the items in the budget that he would like to have funded, and that moves on to the House right now. So the House has possession of the operating budget. This week, they are dividing up into subcommittees for each agency and the university and the court system. To actually examine each one of the budget pieces. President Gamble will be down here next week for a State of the University overview with the House Finance Subcommittee, which is, in our case, the full committee. Everyone that's on the House Finance Committee is also on the University Subcommittee. That may or may not be televised. It's typically just something where he goes over the whole university budget and what we have asked for in the operating portion of it. We will go through this exercise again on capital. I can tell you that the governor funded the pay raises in the bill, but little else. We asked for a lot of things like student success, and there were some vital programs that we wanted. They were not in the governor's budget. The one thing that was $100,000 to put the UAF and also another $100,000 for UAA's honors program in the base. So hopefully that will go through. There was some discussion on it last year. They got one-time funding, and this year they're pushing to have that funding as a total each year. Right now, we are asking for everything that is in the regents' request. The House Finance Committee is working just from the governor's request, but certainly anything that's in the regents' request is fair game for advocacy. Are there any questions about it so far?
Anne, can you hear
me? Yes.
Anne, this is Joella. Who is the chair of the House Finance Committee, and will they then also be the chair of the University Subcommittee, which is, of course, the whole, but...
Right. Good question. Well, there's co-chairs of the House Finance Committee, that being Bill Thomas out of Haines and Bill Stoltz out of Chugach Eagle River. Bill will be working on capital, and Bill Stoltz will be working on capital, and Thomas works on the operating. He's in charge of it. The chair of the House Finance Subcommittee, I believe, is Representative Anna Faircloth.
Okay. And then on the State of the University, is that strictly the president reporting to the legislature, or will there be an opportunity for public input?
That is strictly an opportunity just for the president to report to the legislature. He likes to do that on a solo basis. If it is up on telecast, either gavel to gavel or the Alaska Legislature website, I can certainly send that off. But right now, this is just a very typical programmatic, you know, this is what is in our budget, and he has a chance to defend pieces in there. Having said that, there will be opportunities for public participation, but right now it's just the start of all of this.
Well, please, it would be greatly appreciated if the public is able to view on gavel to gavel, for example, President Gamble's presentation. We would appreciate a heads up.
Okay, well, I'm glad you mentioned that. My next item on my order of business here is to talk about communication with everyone. You know, we've been focused over the last several years on not only the budget but life science. And if anyone goes up on Westridge, they'll see that the building is up. It's beautiful. You know, dreams really do come true, and everyone worked very hard on that, and it's a reality. We are working on a newsletter that's going out. It's going to be sent out from the UAF Alumni Association. And if you'd like to be put on that listserv, I can either send it to you individually, or I can ask that it be run through Nicole so that you can get an update on what's going on in Juneau. I promise it'll be really short, really brief, and it'll give you links to things like when the president speaks, when it's time to do public testimony, what the status of the budget is, who all the legislators are, and tools that you can use to watch and advocate. All of this information will be posted on the UAF alumni website. we'll also have links to the statewide state relations page so that we're all in coordination. So it keeps you up to date on what's going on. And again, I promise to make it really short because I know your time is valuable, but we'll start sending that out here very shortly.
Are there any questions for Ann in the room?
I'm sorry.
Well, Ann, we really appreciate you joining us today, and we'll be keeping an eye on further updates and making sure that we get information out to all our constituents.
Okay, and let me know the best way to do that. Talk about it, and then let me know.
Okay, thanks. I think sending it to Nicole and myself is the best thing, and then we can disperse it from there.
Is this Pips?
Yeah, this is Pips. Sorry.
Okay.
Thanks, Ann. Great.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other public comment? For the public comment section, anybody else here to talk? Okay, then we'll move on to officer reports. First, wanted to welcome any new members that are here or online. We're happy to have you. I'm hoping that this can be kind of a first meeting where you can kind of just see what's happening and learn a little bit about how business works. We're going to have an orientation associated with our February meeting. So February will be a fun meeting. We'll be starting at the Chancellor's House for breakfast. Then we'll be having a full meeting here, and then we'll have an orientation after that. So I'm hoping that today and the February meeting will allow new members just to kind of see how business works, kind of understand the flow of things. I think the orientation will make more sense at that point, too, and people will be able to ask questions. We don't have a lot of new members, but just wanted to make sure that that we were welcoming people who are here for the first time. Or online for the first time, and look forward to working with everybody. I don't have a written president's report this time, but wanted to update you on the System Governance Council meeting that we had yesterday that was attended by the president, and he spent an hour talking with us. System Governance is the leadership of statewide staff, faculty, alumni, and students. There's about, I don't know, 15 or 16 people on the council, and once or twice during the year, the president comes and briefs us on the things that are happening at statewide. It was a good meeting, and it was he gave a very detailed update on where he is right now and what he expects for the future. We talked a little bit about the system governance meeting before he got there about the tuition waiver and the benefits that we get as staff members. As you remember, we sent a resolution to Staff Alliance, and that was sent to the president to say we would prefer not to see changes made to this benefit. It's an important benefit to us, and we think that the tracking of failing grades and having to pay back the benefit as was suggested would be a lot of paperwork and would be expensive to manage. We like the way it's being done now. There's no flagrant abuse of this benefit. That was sent on as a motion from Staff Alliance to the president. He rejected it on the grounds that he felt it should come from system governance. So instead of coming from the overall staff, the UA, the statewide staff alliance, he wanted it to go to system governance first and then to him. So we did that yesterday, and Juella brought it as our staff alliance leader to system governance. System governance said they support our request, and they're going to forward that on to the president. So we hope to have another voice with faculty, staff, and faculty, students, and alumni supporting our request for no change to that benefit. I'll keep you updated on that, but we were happy to have system governance support on that. The president talked about his strategic direction status and where that is. The external listening sessions are coming to a close. They've been happening over the last few months. There's a lot of data. There are some internal people who are at the external meetings. The idea is to break it down into some themes, and from the themes determine some outcomes, and from the outcomes talk about the barriers that the university faces in establishing or trying to get to these outcomes. And so those will be worked on over the next year. The internal listening sessions are going to start happening this month. In fact, they already have started February 14th, they'll be at the university, and I want to make sure I encourage all the staff who are here to encourage all their constituents to make sure that they attend the internal listening sessions on the 14th. They don't have the details posted on the statewide website, but I'm sure they will become available. I think that's an important place for us to have our voice heard, and I really want a good staff showing, so I'd encourage everybody to kind of put that on their calendars for something to attend that day. I think I will stop there for the moment and hand it over to Juella.
Excuse me, I really didn't have a report until she just reminded me of something. Staff was given the opportunity to provide input on the questions to be used at these listening sessions, and I would have to say we disagreed on questions. And so I would encourage, and I don't know that we'll have an opportunity before the first ones come to our campus, but I would encourage you to attend and ask tough questions or make tough comments, because all of the comments are recorded. And taken to the president, and they're reviewed, you know, they're combined, they're processed, then reviewed as a part of setting the strategic direction of the university. And so I was disappointed with some of the questions that they did not want to use, that Staff Alliance put forward, and it's certainly my intent to show up, and the more people that speak to these issues, for example, basically one of the questions I asked or I suggested was, does the university, I don't know, to put it not, I can't remember the exact wording, but does the university take good care of its employees? Do you feel that the university takes care of its employees? And they didn't want to ask that question. So I would encourage you, there is an opportunity to make comments towards the end of the listening session. And I would encourage you, if you want to raise a particular issue, that's an opportunity to do it and put the word out to those that you represent. We encourage them to take advantage of that opportunity. I will say that the community listening sessions swung from very little attendance to a fair and good amount of attendance. I hope that we can, in our two sessions, can certainly have a great deal of attendance. So we'll get out a specific announcement on this, when they're coming to town and when it's going to be faculty, because there are going to be three different sessions, one for faculty, one for students, and one for staff. If you are both, as I am, I would encourage you to attend both as a student and as a staff. I certainly will get the word out with the dates and places and times of the staff session. That's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Juella. Are there any questions for either me or Juella on larger system reports?
So we're not sure if the February 14th one is for staff.
No, they're having all three in the same day.
Oh, okay.
Is my understanding. Okay. Probably, yeah.
Yeah, we need to just figure out what time.
Time and time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the Chancellor is going to join us at 9:15. We're a little bit ahead of that. But just looking at the agenda, we're going to have the Chancellor, and then I know Kathy Cahill, Faculty Senate, is going to be calling in. I'm not sure if we'll have anybody from ASUAF. And then I know Carla Browning will be here as well. And other than that, we have committee reports and some seats to fill. I think the other piece of the other conversation that I'd like to have today, if we can just kind of put that under officer reports before the Chancellor gets here, is this, and we may get out early since we have a limited agenda today. Juelle and I have been talking a lot about the organization of staff council, and I've asked you to think about it the last two meetings. I've asked you to think about how our council works, if there's ideas that you have about reorganization, if there's things that we could be doing differently, if we should have a completely different structure. I'm open to suggestions. Juelle is open to suggestions. We've talked about the fact that we have 34 seats, many of which are unfilled at the moment. We have we've just gone through elections. We haven't filled all the I don't mean this to be you know, a doomsday report, but I do wonder if we're organized in the right manner. And in conversations with some of the committees, it sounds like people are kind of ready to be talking about a change. As I've mentioned before, Anchorage and Southeast both have different ways of organizing their staff councils. They're not elected by unit. They're much smaller organizations. They seem to have a fairly good advocacy program for their staff. So I'd like to put it back to you. I've put out ideas for the last 2 months based on the Chancellor's request for us to think, as leaders of staff, us to think this year about how we're doing and if we're effective and if this organization is the way we should be currently organized. So I've had lots of conversations with individuals, but I'd like to throw it back at you at this time. We've been talking about it for a couple months, and I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Please raise your hand first.
Gary.
Well, I appreciate this, and I think it's particularly difficult at UAF and to some degree at UAA, but we are spread pretty wide and trying to give fair representation for a lot of the different issues that occur, particularly in the rural areas. You know, School of Fisheries, right now we have one representative from Fairbanks, which is myself. We have one individual in Seward, and we have one alternate in Juneau. I think just to give you a brief idea. So when we've looked at trying to make things a little more compact, at the same time as we didn't want to disenfranchise the folks that are in the outer areas. When we dealt with some of the larger units, we found that it was hard, cyclically hard, to get a full complement, a full slate of representatives. The Geophysical Institute is a good example. They're a really big unit, but their participation has been more or less down in the last 5 or 6 years. So maybe there's some way of maximum of two reps per unit and two alternates, something that can still make sure that you have representation, but that doesn't inflate the numbers beyond what we can sustain as from the time it takes from our regular working time.
You know, we haven't, I guess, spoken directly to this idea of maybe electing at-large members versus unit members, or you know, some other way of defining what this group looks like. So I think you're starting us on a good conversation. And one thing that I'd like to talk about later in the meeting is what benefit you feel you have as a person representing a unit. How does that benefit your unit or our campus or our staff as opposed to being elected at large? So I'm glad that we started this conversation, because I'm not sure I understand the answer to that, and I'd like to follow on with that conversation. And I think we will do that after the remarks by Chancellor Rogers and our governance report. So if we could put this conversation on hold for a minute, and welcome Chancellor Rogers.
Thank you. I also look forward to hearing about the results of the governance discussions, figuring out how you best want to organize, how you best want to make an impact on the university. I think it's a useful discussion to have periodically, and appreciate that there are people here who put a lot of thought into it over the years and have a lot to offer. Just a couple of things. One, we've got a Chancellor's Forum scheduled for the 10th of February, opportunity to essentially open to all staff, a Q&A session. If there are any particular issues you'd like me to address, just send an email, and I'll include those in the opening remarks. You're all invited to breakfast at the Chancellor's House before the next meeting of Staff Council, when everyone's here in town, which is the the 17th of February. Obviously, the legislature started last week, and we're looking forward to a good legislative session. We're hoping the legislature will treat our budget even better than the governor did, looking at addressing some of the operating and capital budgeting that weren't included in the governor's budget. I'll be kicking off probably in early February a new Employee of the Month award. Haven't determined exactly what the process is going to be yet, but in a conversation with Bernie Carl, we got to talking about how to recognize the people who do remarkable things here. And he said, well, I'll give you a certificate good for a night at the hot springs and the energy tour and hot springs pass, and you can give one of those out every month. So that'll be the we figured out what people are going to get. Now we just have to figure out the process for how to recognize the seller. So I've got those for the next coming up for the next 12 months. I know there's ongoing concern about the issue of non-exempt staff serving as adjunct faculty. I think that we've managed to avoid the course of action that some had suggested, that it just be an absolute prohibition. There are challenges because of the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act in how we address it, and there are budget impacts of understanding the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, but it is an open issue. It is open in that we can continue to hire non-exempt staff as adjuncts, albeit with special provisions. Those are the primary things I wanted to cover. I wanted to leave some time for any questions that members of staff council might have.
I wanted to ask, Ann Ringsend was on a moment ago talking about Juneau and next week's State of the University to the legislature. Will you be traveling down to that?
No.
Do you have, any input? I guess my question is, do you think that we're looking at possibly another, what is it, seven appropriations or something like that versus one?
I think it's too early in this legislative session to really predict what they're going to do on the budget. It wouldn't, there's been enough legislative support for the seven appropriations in the last couple of years. This is the same legislature that we had last year. They did it last year. It wouldn't surprise me to do that. It has created some internal challenges for us that I think in part have harmed the campuses that certain people are trying to protect, so it's possible they'll come to their senses, but I really don't know.
Do you get an opportunity to speak to them directly, obviously as our chancellor, or do you host them here?
If invited, the chancellors will be making a presentation. We haven't heard from the finance committees whether they want such a presentation. In the last year, we did have an opportunity for all three chancellors to present. Not clear. Again, it's really up to the legislature how they want to schedule their process and their hearing. We try to keep our schedules flexible so that if they call, we can be there. I do have travel scheduled for other business in Juneau, I think, three times during the legislative session, and we'll be meeting with particularly the legislators who represent campuses, where the UAF campuses. So that'll be next month, and then again in March.
Gary?
Just a quick question. It may not be exactly staff, but just wonder this spring, what do you see as what do you foresee as kind of some of the top issues that you're working on?
The number one risk for UAF continues to be the combined heat and power plant. How many times have I said that at the council? How many more will I? you know, in that the primary issue is the permitting process. No legislative action needed. With the board, I think the public-private partnership for dining and housing will be a significant issue between now and June, when hopefully we're ready to make a decision on which package to proceed with.
Yes.
We've received two proposals from private teams, and these are design, construction, finance, ownership teams for an addition on the west side of Wood Center, and housing in the Copper Lane and or Chandelier area. We've received two detailed proposals. We're in the process of evaluating those. If everything works, those would be online in the fall of 2014 for the housing, spring of 2014 for the dining, that we then convert Tilly to a bookstore and welcome center. Fairly exciting project, a challenge. We haven't done a public-private partnership for facilities since we built the original heat and power plant in the 60s. So it's we're breaking new ground on that. We also kicked off a project that I think there'll be a lot of discussion about internally, and that is the revitalization of the West Bridge. We have five projects. We had five projects on our deferred maintenance list: the rehabilitation and deferred maintenance on Elvey, on Irving 1 and 2, on O'Neill, and the completion of the Arctic Health deferred maintenance. I rolled those into a single project because ultimately thinking about the platform for research for the next 40 years, the way those buildings were for the last 40 years, really requires some, I think some creative thinking. It's a project about the same scale as the combined heat and power, and the challenge with it is we need to rehabilitate those buildings without interrupting the scientific research that's going on, and with the minimum disruption to it, and with keeping certain 24-hour facilities operating 24/7, the satellite facility ABO is two examples. So a lot of logistical issues in terms of how we do that, and some programmatic. So I think those are issues in terms of sort of what we're talking about here on campus. In Juneau, I think the primary opportunities will be to, you know, the number one priority is for better advising for students. We'll be talking a lot about that to try to improve graduation rates. We'll be talking about some of the programmatic enhancements in the operating budget, and then three key capital budget research projects. The,
if it's this one, I'm not approving any.
The energy partnership,
the
oil spill, and the ocean acidification.
Lots of discussion
on all three of those. And then one piece that's not in the capital budget is in our six-year plan, and there's a lot of legislative
interest,
is in the engineering building for Anchorage and Fairbanks. We're well along the way on the concept design for the Duckering addition. The building will essentially wrap around from Duckering to Bunnell, connecting those two buildings, and the initial look is a pretty exciting new student spaces that wouldn't just be for School of Management and Engineering, but actually because it would be two new Scheibel Hall, that would be for general campus use. So a lot in the physical structures that support the campus.
There's a lot of background noise.
Yeah, if people could mute their phones, that would be helpful.
Well, let me just one other area is depending on what we get from the Northwest Commission on our accreditation letter this week or next, there could be additional activity there. The commission, we met with the commission a week and a half ago, and should get our letter. We are quite sure we will be reaccredited, the challenge is that there's one area that they may ask for additional work, and that's on student learning outcomes, how we assess them and how we use that for curriculum. And we're really kicking off the next round of the 7-year accreditation cycle with a review of mission, what our core themes and objectives are, and the strategic planning that goes along with that.
Are there any further questions for the Chancellor? Yes, Brad.
Again, I guess this is less a staff question and more personal since I was involved in the honors program as a student. But you mentioned housing on construction on Copper Lane. Are the houses, you know, the honors program building, will those still be there? Are they going to be moved? Do we know?
The honors program would be moved, and they knew that when they did the work last summer, that that was the preferred location for the next housing. We have two potential locations that we've looked at for honors. One that we've done some work on, there's a house just above the fire hall that the art department had for a while, and the honors program, actually, the students did a lot of work in looking at how could they make that into honors house. Fairly expensive project the way it came out. We then had a broken steam line in the house that caused mold, and we think we've cleared that problem up, so that may or may not even be available. The second proposal, and there really hasn't been extended discussion of this, would be to make Wickersham Hall into the honors program, including housing and honors, and really as the central housing on our campus really highlight the honors program. So those are two of the ideas out there. The existing honors house, as we're growing that program, is going to be inadequate for the program anyway. It's really exciting to see the number of new students coming into it.
So it ended up being a little more like, I just forgot the name of the Scarland. Scarland used to be an honors dorm.
Yeah, so that would be one of the concepts we're working on. Part of it depends on whether this public-private partnership goes forward or not. It's not easy to make the numbers work on a private partnership, we're going to have to stretch a little bit to make that a success. But so much, the central part of the Fairbanks campus would be so transformed by this set of projects and the opportunities, not only for more modern housing and for a single dining facility to serve, but also to create an opportunity for the bookstore to have parking outside the bookstore, which we think is kind of a radical concept. I don't know if anybody's ever tried it before, but it's an interesting idea. And to have the admissions and other things so that when people first come on the campus, they can get that. We think will make a big difference on the campus.
Thank you.
So then you tab over and you switch.
Any final questions?
Chancellor, do you know the timeline for the Duckering add-on? If any has been set?
Yeah, totally dependent on funding, but let's say in an ideal world, we would get $30 million this year, which would complete planning and design for both Anchorage and Fairbanks. Next year, we would get the construction money, so we would be able to go to bid in the spring of, ideally we'd get all the money this year for both buildings, in which case we'd probably be ready to go to bid in about April of next year, do a little bit of site preparation in the summer of 13, and probably be open in the fall of 15. If we get if on a more realistic, it's probably likely to be the fall of 16 that would be available. There'll be some tight logistics on this one, as is the case with West Ridge, because building above Scheibel, if you remember, Scheibel is our most used room at Fairbanks, at the Fairbanks campus. So we'll have to try to sequence that so that we don't disrupt the use of Scheibel during the spring and fall semesters. It would probably take it offline in the summer of 14 or the summer of 15. So interesting constructability issues, but 15 to 16 would be the timing.
Any final questions? Well, with that, thank you, Chancellor Rogers, for joining us today. Kathy, I'm wondering if you're online.
I am indeed.
So here's Kathy Cahill, President of Faculty Senate, and thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. One of the key things that's coming up for Faculty Senate, and we'd really like to invite the staff, is February 6th from 3:30 to 5 in the Wood Center Ballroom. We're going to have Dr. Claudia Lantman from UAA come up, and the title of her talk, and it's going to also be a moderated discussion, is Student Incivility, Bullying, and Aggression. And this is something that we really would like to encourage the staff to attend in addition to faculty. The discussion is something that happens a lot, but I don't think is really discussed very often in terms of students and their effects on the faculty and staff. So I think this would be a very interesting discussion, and it might be of interest to staff. So we'd encourage all of you to attend. We're working on policy and regs like everybody else. And the, of course, new mission statement and accreditation core themes. There'll be some discussion of this at the upcoming Faculty Senate meeting in terms of do we feel that the proposed revisions are encapsulate everything that the faculty want to see in our mission and accreditation themes. Of course, we know the sooner we get this through, the sooner we can, you know, take the steps towards completing our first year report and really showing that we're being responsive to what comes out in the report, hopefully this week or next, in terms of our accreditation. We're also going to be discussing the Stay on Track and Complete America initiatives from statewide. The faculty have some concerns about these in terms of what are the expectations and the fact that it does not actually target, in some cases, who our students actually are. And so the Stay on Track, you know, it's great for first-time, full-time freshmen. It's not so good for people who are coming and are dealing with life in addition, our non-traditional students. And, you know, we'd really like to try to see if there's some way we can come up with something that's a little more inclusive, you know, with something like, you know, create your own path, let us help you type thing. So that's something that the faculty are going to be discussing to see how we respond to these and what we can do to make our students feel included, even if they don't necessarily fit in a pigeonhole that is being highly pushed. Other thing is we had an e-learning task force discussing how you do distance labs and across the three MAUs. So it was three faculty from each MAU discussing what needs to be done, how do we handle hands-on labs, you know, were virtual labs sufficient, et cetera. And a preliminary draft of that report is being circulated among some of the science faculty here at UAF to kind of get our input into whether or not we think what they came up with is appropriate and how actually we might be able to institute it here. So that's an ongoing thing of concern to the faculty, and it's, of course, going to be something of concern to the staff. If you guys get stuck helping us arrange and mail out kits to the Bush and other places. So those are the key things that we have coming up. Are there any questions for me?
Kathy, I don't see any questions, but I'm wondering if you have a flyer or more information about the seminar on February 6th, we could distribute that, you know, amongst our listserv as well.
We definitely do. I will make sure you get a copy, Pip.
That sounds great. So are there any other questions for Kathy?
You just missed a spot.
Well, Kathy, thank you very much for joining us today. I think you've explained everything so clearly. We have no questions.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
So I don't think there's anybody here from ASUAF today. So we can move on. I think the next thing that we would potentially, since we're it's still 9:33, and I know Carla Browning will be here at 10:05. So instead of going on to a break right now, I would suggest we go to unfinished and new business and use that as time to talk about a potential reorganization. Is everybody okay with that? You okay, Gary? Stepping outside the bounds of our agenda here a little bit, but you know, it's a light agenda this month, and I really would like to have this conversation. You know, it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, and if we can get back to Gary's comment about, you know, representing our units, I'd like to understand what people, how do you feel that you benefit from representing a unit, or how do you think your unit benefits from having you as a representative, rather as opposed to an at-large? You know, we elect 15 people on campus, and they serve all of staff. What are the cons to doing that, or pros?
This is Debbie Gonzalez. I was just going to say one of the positive parts of it is if you represent people you actually work with, they're maybe hopefully more likely to pay attention than just somebody that they really don't know. So I do see that as an advantage. It just seems like we still have so much trouble getting involvement from, you know, at the unit level. So maybe those units need to be reorganized or rethought. I don't know. But I do think that people do respond to having somebody that they know and can go to, that they know they can go to, that they know otherwise, I guess.
So I think that's a good point, Debbie. I guess maybe the flip side of that is that some of our units are, you know, made up of lots of little disparate units around campus, so there isn't that personal connection. I think that's been the case with my experience. We're made up of lots of little units that don't really make any sense other than that they have to be kind of categorized somewhere.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because my unit is, the one I represent, is a little bit smaller than, not smaller, but, you know, less spread out, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on unit representation versus at-large?
Yep.
Yes, Carolyn.
Being from a larger unit, I think it's really important that we have the personal contact with our unit, but I think that it's totally feasible to have both types of representation, where you take your smaller units that, you know, and have those at large, and then the larger units have their own personal rep.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder. Say we thought about seriously, you know, changing things and having at-large representations. Could that just work kind of naturally? Could it work automatically? I mean, you're there. You're in. You know, say you're in GI and you're connecting with the people around you anyway. You wouldn't be tasked necessarily with the connection of the people at GI, but that would kind of happen naturally because you're there and those are the people that you talk to anyway. I just wonder if that would just kind of be a natural progression of things anyway.
Well, I think it would. I think that might be a natural progression, but I think that I think you're going to have more problems getting representation in the larger units if it's that large. That's just my perspective on it.
Yeah, that could be. And this is exactly the kind of conversation that I want to have, you know, just getting everybody's thoughts out right now. I guess I feel like we already have a hard time getting representation. And I'm not sure it would get worse, but, you know, would it get better? I guess that's the question. With 34 seats and 34 alts, and coming to meetings that are, you know, partially attended and having a slate of representatives that are partially, you know, it's a partially filled slate right now. And then going to our internal committee meetings that should be, you know, really vibrant where a lot of the work's getting done and kind of seeing the same people at all those meetings, it really makes me wonder why we're organized this way. Because it really doesn't seem to be working now.
Well, a lot of it comes back to how can we get, I still think it's how we communicate and how we get more staff participation, that we get more interest in the organization as something that really is, you know, a vital doing, changing, impacting organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think, this is Jennifer and Stewart, I think we've kind of limited ourselves with the amount of seats we have. Because the external committees are dwindling down in numbers because of the amount of work that has to be put into it. I think if there's a way we can get more people involved. I don't know how to do that yet, but we definitely need more people. So we need to find either a better way to reorganize, or we need to find more incentive for these people to get involved. Over the last few years I've been on staff council, I've sat on staff affairs, and both committees draw up a tremendous amount of time just as a member, not as a chair, and so it does take up a lot of time, and it's going to be really hard to get other people involved. So we need to find a way of getting more seats.
Yeah, Jennifer, I think you bring up a really good point, and it's something that that I've kind of struggled with too. You know, right now we have several people who are representing staff council on various committees that are not on staff council because we just need staff members to fill the seats. And so I think perhaps with a smaller board, a smaller core group of people, you know, the people who are sitting around the phones and the room right now who are dedicated and come to meetings and work hard and represent staff in our community and work on the committees that we have, I can see perhaps a small group of people being kind of the lean core team, but then inviting other staff members to come and help serve on committees the way, you know, lots of organizations work, that we don't need, you know, 34 members on the staff council perhaps to get everything done. So if we had a smaller group, that doesn't preclude involving a lot more staff members. It would be just a different way of doing it.
I agree, and we'd also get more information if we opened it up to more people.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's hard for us to gather information from all of our units via email, and it's really time-consuming if you pick up the phone.
It is, and the communication really doesn't seem to be working very well. I mean, over the last 2 years, we've had seminars on how to communicate. We've had little flyers on how to communicate. And you know, asking 13 people to communicate with their constituents and get information back, that flow of information doesn't work. When we ask something to go out from staff council, typically it doesn't go out to constituents. And so Nicole has been wonderful about sending out information that we need. She just sends it out to the listservs right now, because that way we know the information is going to get out. But the modes of communication that we've developed and that are available to reps to use aren't being used. And I think you know, we've been talking about this for a couple of years. I can appreciate, you know, people's conversations about we just need to communicate better. But it's something that we've been talking about for a really long time, and it's still not happening. And it's making me think that we need something really different. We know one thing that has been tossed out by a couple of people: we want to make sure that rural representation is available. That's not something that, to me, that's not something that we want to just kind of say, okay, at large, and if you happen to be rural and you get elected, that's great. So we really do want rural representation. So maybe we have a seat for, or you know, some percentage of seats for rural representatives. But I'd like you to think about the idea of at large, a smaller group, maybe a couple of distinctions, a couple of seats set aside for specific groups that need representation. I'd like to elevate staff council to an organization on campus that people look to and say, I would love to get involved. And I don't think that's where we are right now. I think people say, oh, I should get involved, and kind of feeling the need to. The faculty have a slightly different situation because they get credit. They have to do some kind of service as a faculty member. As staff members right now, we run because we want to. We want to affect change. We're not represented by a collective bargaining unit. And when I go to system governance meetings, you know, they're sitting next to a bunch of faculty who are all represented by high, you know, fairly powerful unions that are getting things done. Well, we're the people that are getting things done for staff members right now. And I question what our effectiveness is. And I question how effective we've been. We get the important things done because we have to, and because the people sitting up here are scared not to. But as an organization, I really wonder why, you know, how we can just be doing things better. You know, after coming to these meetings for a long time and struggling with membership, I've come to a point where I think we really need something different. Joelle, do you want to talk?
Well, I appreciate one of the things that I look forward to in working with PIPS was our approaches are different. My approach is to put something up, put something visible there, and let people throw darts at it. And in the course of our brainstorming and conversations, I recognize that PIPS's approach is different, and so she's asking you all for input and thoughts and ideas, and I'm here to say, you know, here's what I think, and here's what I suggest. You know, I suggest, for example, a board of 15 people, and the membership is proportional to, you know, if 30% of the employees at the University of Alaska Fairbanks are rural, then 30% of the membership of that 15 people body is rural. In the course of the conversations with the chancellor, we talked about if 20% of the university's employees are employed in research, then 20% of that 15-person body represents research, and so on. Making a 15, I'm just pulling a number out, 15-person body representative of the employees of the university. And then one of the things we talked about, too, was a permanent or a full-time person whose role is communication. Because what our challenges, as PIPS brought up, is with it is the individual representative's responsibility to communicate to their constituents. And our challenge is finding that that's not happening consistently. And so we talked about, you know, if we have one person, so for example, at a lot of these kinds of meetings, you have a sergeant at arms, which we know Gary has served informally as. whether or not he cares to admit it.
Parliamentary, maybe. But
okay, well, so what we're talking about is a communications person, you know, in this body of 15, and their primary role is to work, you know, with the officers and with Nicole to communicate to all university, to all of UAF's employees.
But, Joella, you said full-time. I mean, that would be their only duties as a representative, or they'd be a full,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
I guess I question what you meant by full-time.
Well, that's, so for example, my role here is vice president. This person's role would be communication.
Okay, not that would be their paid
right.
job.
Right.
Okay,
and then,
sorry. I think that's probably a really good idea.
Right, and then, you know, we would, of course, have to look at the committee structure as well. But, you know, that's something that could be worked out. If, you know, we had a 3-person staff affairs that did some preliminary legwork for the 15-person, but that's something, we haven't really dug into because our concern was the concept of at-large versus unit. And so I guess that's one thing I'm throwing out there for your discussion and reaction to.
Gary.
Just a couple of ideas that I'm trying to think back when we probably had a little more participation. And I know we used to have our meetings catered. Maybe it's much cheaper than hiring a staff member to do budget-wise, I don't see it.
I'm having trouble hearing.
I'm trying to
We're
think.
Working on the sound.
Oh, yes. There's a little echo. I think somebody's was formerly not muted in the rural area. You know, a little bit, I'm just thinking of just what we had to drop catering, you know, the breakfast with a little bit of stuff out there, and I think we probably had better participation that way. But that got cut for budget reasons. When you look at how the other organizations handle a lot of this stuff, they are paid. You don't have anybody that's got any paid assigned tasks as part of their job duties when they're elected a staff council, so it's always a balance, and people are probably spending more time beyond their 40 hours handling that, and they have to be willing to do that. So
And they have to be willing to do it for 2 years. I think that's a long time commitment. I don't know. And you're serving on staff council here and going back, and I go back and type out minutes to send to my constituents and then going to serve on the external or internal committees. It is a lot of time. And I think that was the most disappointing thing when I first joined last year, because I joined when my unit wasn't up for election. So technically now I have to serve 3 years. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a long time commitment.
Yeah, of course, one of the reasons that we have a 2 year is so that we can have that overlap, so we don't get, you know, we don't have a complete turnover every year. But it is a big commitment. And I think Juella's comment about having somebody for communications wasn't a paid position. That was just the person who was sitting in that vice chair or vice president seat would be responsible for communications. So there weren't necessarily, you know, 13 people all responsible for typing up the minutes every month and sending them out, that there would be one central point of contact for that. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, this is Gary. I wonder if, you know, part of the problem with time commitments, if, you know, your discussion, Pips, on whether or not, you know, to sort of have multiple classes of commitment from folks is, you know, looking at that and trying to sell that aspect of it might be more viable for folks to look at, to say, oh, gosh, you know, the way my job is, you know, I can, you know, maybe squeeze in an extra, say, 5 hours a week or whatever the case. And somebody else may say, well, I've got a fairly flexible job and maybe my supervisor is, you know, more willing than someone else to say, gosh, you know, I could devote, you know, 10 hours a week. And if we're trying to get folks to fill slots, making slots more interesting to folks by saying, you know, this requires a commitment of X number of hours or effort, however you want to phrase that, may be a way to help folks find their niche.
I guess my response to that is it really is what you put into it. I mean, we have everything from the amount of time to come to this meeting to the amount of time to chair a committee to the amount of time it takes to serve as an officer. That's a big difference in time commitment.
Yeah, but do people realize that? I mean, really look at that and go, oh, you know, I mean, when I ended up here, I had no sense of time, no sense of the level of what's involved. And I think that would make a big difference for folks.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Gary. I like the way you've kind of laid that out. And I think that could go for either of the structures that we're kind of talking about, you know, whether we kind of kept on with the status quo and then kind of delineated that a little better for people, especially, you know, at an orientation like next month. But also that could work really well, I think, for this proposed change of a smaller board and then bringing people in who aren't necessarily on this small board to do other things. So I really like the way that you've packaged that. I think that could be a really nice way of communicating to people. And I think it could work either way, actually. You know, I think there's always going to be, I mean, really there are always several people or a group of people who are putting a ton of time into it, and then there are people who have the opportunity to put a little bit less but are really involved, and then there's, you know, that majority who are doing things when asked but don't have the time to do a lot. So I think in the organizations that I've been involved with, there's always been kind of that tier of various tiers of commitment.
Well, you know, and it might be a way for folks to look at that and go, oh, you know, that wasn't, you know, that was doable. Maybe I should look at being able to be more involved next year or, you know, 2 years down the road, or maybe, you know, for lack of a better term, sort of a learning aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments for today, Brad?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, you guys have been asking for feedback, and as someone who's only been here for 1 year, I don't really feel comfortable saying, well, I don't think this is working mm-hmm. this way, or that this isn't, you know, it would be better if we do it this way.
Yeah.
Because there's a much longer history.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience of it is so small.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm not very friendly toward change. You know, I'm very reluctant to say, oh, okay, let's make these, you know, let's make sweeping changes and that'll fix things. I'm suspicious. I don't think, you know, I'm just not sure that, you know, having a smaller board is necessarily going to be the cure-all or... But I guess that's not very helpful in terms of getting feedback.
Well, that's okay, and I think it's a good point that you bring up actually, because you know, change is unsettling. It's change. You know, it's not necessarily unexpected, but you can't anticipate all the ramifications that a change is going to bring about. And so I appreciate your comments to that effect. I think I would feel the same way if I'd been here a year and hadn't had kind of the experiences that I've had. There are several people who are not on staff council right now who are very vehement about wanting change, and they've been around for a long time. And you know, part of the reason they're not back is that that the status quo wasn't working for them. So there, you know, there's these other ways of looking at it. But I very much appreciate your idea of, you know, we don't want to change just for the sake of change. And that was why I wanted to start with this conversation about things that are working well, things that aren't working well, and throwing out. Rather than presenting you an idea of, like, we want to head here, and what are your thoughts on that, really having a conversation about where would be the best place to go. I mean, I'm open to ideas of what this could look like a year from now. But I think it's an exciting conversation to have, and I'm not afraid to have that conversation. And if we end up in the same place, that means that we've decided that this is the best place we should be right now. But if we don't end up there, then I'm really glad that I'm glad that we're having the conversation either way, because I think we'll hopefully be a stronger group as a result of this conversation. But in order to be a stronger group, we need everybody to be thinking about this and giving ideas and talking to people who have been on staff council. One of the things that I think I might do is invite a couple of people back next meeting to talk about what their experiences have been and why I think they would like to see some change. And maybe even put together something to say, hey, this is a starting point. Because I think Juella's idea of having something to throw darts at is probably effective as a time measure. You know, the way I prefer to do things is to have this discussion, but it takes time. You know, it's a democratic process, and it's messy, and it takes time, and people are going to say yes and no, and that's okay. But right now, like a brainstorming, getting ideas on the table, maybe throwing out the ridiculous ideas that we know aren't going to work, that's all okay for right now. So with that, I guess I don't have anything more to say about this at the moment. But Carolyn, and if there are other people have thoughts, I'd love to hear them. We don't have to end right now. But
Walker online does.
Okay, Walker, you're right after Carolyn.
Tips, I would like to suggest that maybe as president, you give out a directive that everybody bring two positive and negative aspects of the way we are doing things now, and so that we have something to actually discuss. And I personally am against having a smaller board, because I think trying to have miscellaneous people serving on committees and getting that information back to the people on the board is, I think we're going to have just as big of a problem as we have right now. And if you have a smaller number of people on the board, then the committee structure is going to have to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need to evaluate the good points and the bad points and see if we can't come up with some ideas that are, you know, worth looking into and restructuring.
Okay, I like your idea. And kind of it reminds me of something the president said yesterday. Based on the strategic listening sessions they're doing, both internal and external, they're going to come up with some outcomes that they want. So I would like to propose that our outcome is developing the most effective means for organizing staff council. So if I could propose that as the outcome for our group, and then let's go with Carolyn's suggestion and everybody come next month with two pros and two cons, what's working well and what's not working well. Because that's kind of like addressing, maybe through that conversation, maybe we can then get to addressing some of the barriers that we're up against and go at it from there. But I know, Walker, you wanted to say something too.
Yeah, and I'll try to keep it quick, everyone. I agree with Carolyn in that we definitely need to have some pros and cons listed out for any sort of change that we want to do, as well as you know, some clear goals of what we're attempting to do. I mean, part of this may be some people's goal of spending less time here. I mean, when it's non-productive time, some of them, yeah, there could be several goals. But one of the other options or possibilities that I'd like to throw out, going back to some of the initial discussion, is the potential of having several officers that actually represent the committees that they would be the chair of. So when you get elected, you're responsible for that committee for whatever period of time. And I mean, for example, if we had a technology officer, maybe they're the one who's responsible for the tab board. If we have, I mean, they would just have that duty assigned to that position. If we had someone who was here for EMR, it could be the EMR officer, and they would always be the chair of that committee. The additional members, if we do a mix of maybe members at large as well as the designated officers, we could have a tripled or quadrupled number of people that would be meant to serve, but it's hard to say whether or not they should all be spread out equally among units or how that portion should work, but it'd be a detail to be worked out. But some way to identify the chairs early on, as well as empower them to bring in other people so that people don't have to, you know, always come to the bigger staff council meeting where these larger items are discussed. I think that's all.
Thanks, Walker. Any responses to Walker's comments? Well, good. Carolyn, I really like your suggestion. Thank you. So the task next month is to bring two pros and two cons, and we'll continue the conversation, and we'll actually put it on the agenda next time. So thank you all for your thoughts, and I appreciate you thinking about this. With your permission, I'd like to just keep going because we really don't have a lot on the rest of the agenda. We'd like to hear from Carla. So if is everybody okay with foregoing a break and ending a little bit early?
Sounds good.
Okay, great. Carla, come join us.
Are all the mics hot? Are all the mics hot?
Yes, they should be. Sorry. Yes.
So, Pip, should we bring our comments, our two pros, our two cons with us, or email them to you before the next meeting?
Yeah, if people want to email them to me, I know Nicole's just busy with everything that's happening anyway. So why don't you, if you want to CC Nicole, that's great. But I will be in charge of compiling them. So yeah, why don't you email them to me? And then if you don't get to emailing them, bring them when you come. Hi, Carla.
Good morning. How are you all doing? Sounds like there's a lot going on in staff council already this year. So I'll keep my presentation brief. I know Michelle Renfrew came and presented in January and talked a little bit about the branding project. And I wanted to follow on a little bit today and then talk a little bit about internal communications and some things that are happening in our shop marketing communications on that end. We just got the draft report on the research, the survey that we did it last fall. And so McDowell Group did that, and you probably got it in your inbox, some of you several times. Depending on how you're affiliated with the university, your name may have come up more than once. We tested positions for the marketing strategy in triplets. It was a little bit different methodology. I had to kind of let go of the steering wheel and say, okay, you guys go ahead with this, and let's see how this all comes out and how it comes to play. But in doing that, we're able to test the six positioning statements and some of the attributes that came up in our focus group. And we had 4,700 people respond to the survey, prospective students, alumni, staff, faculty, and current students. So it was a really good mix, and McDowell Group and Erlitt Agency were very happy with the research project and the fact that we got this survey out there. What this will give us is some directional signage for which way to focus. We have a brand. We've always had a brand. But knowing what to capitalize on in an actual brand strategy has been something that is really lacking. And so this will give us some direction and focus for going forth in the future. And Michelle mentioned that she talked about the brand you know, the championing of the brand and the success of the brand being the entire campus's responsibility. Marketing can kind of provide some guidance and direction, but it will be up to the individual unit. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about today was what will that look like once we have a brand strategy. Some of the things that came out in the both the focus groups, in-depth interviews, and even in the survey is, for instance, UAF has a welcoming community. That's probably not a surprise to you. Is that a differentiator compared to our competition? And we've actually come up with a list of competitors that we're comparing ourselves to for the purposes of differentiating. How does UAF stand out against our competitors when it comes to the students and what their choices are if they don't decide to come to UAF, where they go? If we look at this welcoming campus as a, you know, does that truly differentiate? It's kind of like personal attention. If you're, or customer service, you know, if you're Nordstrom, that might, you know, be something that really stands out. So we'll be looking at these sorts of things and then determining kind of what are those strengths in the minds of our stakeholders right now. What can we capitalize on and what is truly differentiating from our competition? And I passed out something, and I apologize for those of you who are online. I'll make sure that you do get a copy of this. It's also online at uaf.edu/marketing/branding, and it's a brand IQ assessment tool. This was provided to us by Simpson Scarborough. It's a research company that works with a lot of universities on developing a brand strategy. And it gives us a really good idea of the kinds of things that could be implemented based on what the brand is, but it also is a really good, I think, illustrator of how the brand is not just up to marketing and communications or one particular unit. So one of the questions that says, we actively investigate what's important to our students, alumni, and other constituents using research, face-to-face interviews, and questionnaires. Well, up until now, we really haven't done that. So we've come up with pretty low scores on some of this stuff. Branding is championed throughout the institution from the president down. All key stakeholders are involved in our brand creation and management process. Our institution has systems in place for carefully monitoring the appropriateness, timeliness, integration, and consistency of our brand communications. Well, outside of our logo, we really haven't had a brand strategy to really foster. So I think that at this point, we're looking at ways in which we can do this. So as we develop the brand strategy and have a clear direction of what we're going to capitalize on, we'll be communicating that to the campus. If we decide to do that in a, you know, we can do that in a number of ways. One is in the onboarding process. What should people know when they're hired here as far as our brand goes and what UAF is all about? And so I guess in communicating with you, I'm looking for feedback on how you think that we can best do that and foster the brand, and also see if you have questions or comments related to what is a brand strategy and how is it going, what's it going to look like in my unit or across the campus. Now, Michelle said that you guys had several questions that you asked the last time, but there was some folks missing at the meeting. So I'm curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe just a show of hands, or how many really feel like they really understand what a brand strategy would look like on our campus? Joelle? Okay. When we look at what a brand strategy is, it's really just, somebody said, well, how's that different from a mission statement? It really is capitalizing on what, our mission statement is our business objectives and what we're striving to be. And the brand is what is in really the minds of our stakeholders. It's not up to us. That's why we had to ask the questions and do the research. So now we'll take that and develop that brand strategy. Some of the things that came out of the research were welcoming campus, research, institution, place and experience was a big one that came up. So when we looked at the research, there's not a whole lot of surprises, but it really will give us something to focus on as we move forward. Are there any questions about branding in general?
You know, Carla, I should, communications is what I do, believe it or not, and so I do the publications and so on for our organization, so I work with UAF Marketing to make sure we're in compliance with their marketing strategies and their logo requirements, et cetera. And one of the things I think I hope that comes out of this is sometimes you're the resources aren't current. So, for example, when I want to put together something, and we go to confirm that we're following your requirements, the information there I know isn't current. And so that's one thing I hope that comes out of it is once you launch this new strategy and this new look, et cetera, that right away all those resources are available for people that put together products of the university.
Are you talking about for institutional identity?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Beyond that one part of it, yes. Yes.
Okay. What, you know, part of what comes up about the branding is it the logo? And the logo is just a representation and a reflection of that brand, but it's really what is out there in the minds of our stakeholders. Probably the thing that's been most obvious to me this year has been that even if we had a brand strategy, we haven't really looked at that in comparison to what our competition does, what we do well as compared to our competition. So that's a little bit of a mind shift from what we've done in the past. So you might hear that in terms of research, you know, maybe MIT of the North, or, you know, that we're in comparison to institutions on a competitive level for research grants, and that we have high quality, high caliber research that's going on here. When we're looking at how we communicate that in a brand strategy, we're really looking at it as compared to our competition. And while we compete on a national level for National Science Foundation and other grants, when it comes to students and where they're going, our competition is a little bit narrower focused. Go ahead.
Well, I guess I would just say that's one piece of the pie, though, one slice of it, because, you know, your competition, yes, but where you're pulling those students from is here locally. And what, for example, one of the comments I heard at the listening sessions is we can relate to CTC, but we're not plugged in at all to the Hill. Well, you know, we don't understand, you know, what they're doing and so on. And so you have to look at that when you're looking at a brand and, as a strategy, how do we better connect to the community? If the community bonded with CTC but not us, they're not going to send their kids here necessarily.
One of the things that we heard in the focus groups early on was that there is a connection to – people feel connected to the university, that they're proud of the university. They felt like, you know, that the quality was here. What we then find in our in-depth interviews is that we need to tell – tell our story more, but there's so much going on that it's really hard to get it all out there to the community. I think that was the biggest thing that came out of the in-depth interviews, is that we have so much going on. How do we tell that? How do we get that information out? One of the key components of a brand strategy is when you narrow the focus, you actually strengthen the brand. And one of the things that we've looked at is the difference between a branded house and a house of brands. So you have, for instance, the Procter & Gamble has many, many different brands under it, Tide and Bounce and Dawn and a lot of different brands that you're familiar with. But Procter & Gamble, you know, has that house of brands. A branded house would be your Nike, Apple, Virgin Mobile, some of those types of corporate identities, where they have – Google's another really good example. But you have really a focused – that is the branded house. And so we have, as you know, many, many different brands that are out there communicating to the community what UAF is all about. And it's really unit by unit. It's school, college, research institute. And it results in a little bit of confusion about who, what we are and truly what we do. Each of those brands may be a strong brand in their own strengths, but we haven't really capitalized on that really strengthened, you know, that really single focus. Brand strategy. I think that in all the conversations since I've been back at the university since 2001, anytime we talked about marketing, there's so many stories to tell. It's really hard to focus on that. So in asking our stakeholders what is most important to them, what do they feel like UAF is strong in both functional requirements like academic degrees that we offer and the research going on here, to those emotional things that you can't really you can articulate maybe, but we don't really sort of have in a concrete foundation. By pulling that out of all the focus groups, the in-depth interviews, and then later on the survey and testing the positioning, we're going to be in better shape to know kind of collectively what should we focus on to strengthen that brand. There's a great article in a trade magazine that we received a few months ago, and it was everybody's invited to the party, and it shows that everybody trying to cram in the front door of this party at the same time. And what we're trying to do is have one person knock on the door, you know, and introduce everybody else on the porch. And I think that's really a neat analogy to works for what we're trying to do, which is to strengthen what is that we do best, that we're known for in the minds of our stakeholders. It's no surprise that when we did a keyword analysis that we came up with engineering as one of the top or research as one of the top items. People do know that about us, and we can capitalize on it. We have a lot of brand equity in America's Arctic Research University. But we haven't really developed that into a brand strategy. So it'll be really interesting to see the next phase, which is the brand strategy. Nerland's helping us with that. How will that look across the campus, being able to take those components and relate it to the Geophysical Institute, to the International Arctic Research Center, or Institute of Arctic Biology, the School of Management? We'll find that, you know, it builds kind of a foundation for all of those schools and colleges to have a narrower focus for what they're communicating as well. So I think it'll help us to maximize the dollars that are used for marketing. We have a lot of different advertising pockets going on all over campus. So each individual college, school, and research institute, when they do advertising, they're doing that kind of on their own. And outside of Joella's comment about the logo, outside of the logo guidelines, there's really not been much guidance in the way of what we should be communicating and promoting, you know, in kind of a focused area. So this will help us do that. There's money being spent on advertising across the campus, on water bottles and promotional materials. You probably have them in your own unit. But there's not been anything that's really singly focused. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes out. I don't know if Michelle mentioned, too, that we have a strategic marketing committee that is looking at some of these things, and we're trying to educate that group to kind of take it back to their school or college so everybody knows kind of what the process is. So after we have the brand strategy, the next piece is to develop the creative. And we're kind of on a fast track for this because we want to launch in fall of 2012, and we need to get the creative concepts down and tested before about April 15th because we're, of course, testing those with our current students, and they'll be wrapping up their semester's work, and you know, we want to get that done before the summer. So it's not kind of on a fast track. So things will be moving pretty quickly, and so I wanted to take this opportunity to talk with you and let you know what's going on so that if you have questions or you get questions in your units, to let us know. I've kind of marked out Staff Appreciation Day for an opportunity that we might also present, and I did a Branding 101 last Staff Appreciation Day, and people were like, oh, now I get it. I get that. And they wanted to then take that back and then develop their own brands and their units, which is kind of not what we want to do, but to work with us closely on this brand strategy as we develop it. So like I said, we've just got the draft report back from Nerland, so we'll be looking at that information and then updating the website on the marketing's website, the Branding Project website, so that the information's there about what we learned. And Karen King will be back here on February 8th to develop or to talk more about kind of a draft brand strategy and give the Strategic Marketing Committee a chance to give feedback on that. So look for communications and let us know if you have questions or comments. I mentioned that as we roll this out, we're going to have to communicate what does it look like and how does it feel, and that's going to be a pretty time-intensive process as well. One of the key communication tools that we use is the cornerstone, and I think it's been a couple of years since I came and talked to you about internal communications, and Cornerstone was moved into a WordPress blog a little over a year ago, and we've had mixed reviews to that as far as we've been sending out the link to the entire campus, and we've had a little bit of mixed reviews on folks, you know, from the folks who really liked the old Cornerstone where there was just a formatted list, all the way to folks who really like the blog format. So I would encourage you, if you could just, you know, if you've got thoughts about that, to send me an email, let me know. We're getting ready to launch a survey to talk a little bit more about internal communications. I think that there are some groups of folks who would like to see us merge kind of the newsroom and Cornerstone together to have everything in one single place. It gets a little bit cumbersome. So, you know, as we think about how to communicate both the brand strategy and all the other initiatives going on our campus, let me know how that's working for you. We initially launched it in WordPress so people could also comment and engage the campus community, because WordPress blog has an opportunity for comments. It's not widely used. There's also a keyword component where you can search easily for functions on the Cornerstone, and we don't see a lot in terms of people really knowing how to use that tool. We've fed the news headlines into that tool already, so I just appreciate your feedback and questions about that so that I can develop the survey. We're finalizing it now, but I'd be happy to add questions if you have comments or suggestions on areas that we should ask about in terms of internal communication. So it's going to be very important, if that's our key communication tool, that people are reading it and they know where to find information, you know, to both do their jobs and various initiatives from the chancellor all the way across the campus. So,
thanks, Carla. Are there any quick questions for Carla, Gary?
Just a quick one. I was thinking about when you said America's Arctic University, and of course that ties in some things. And they're in the process of revising the mission statement and all of that. And I've looked at some of the drafts of that, and they're trying to fit everything in, like into one sentence, which becomes one giant run-on sentence, just to keep it compact is the theory. And we're so broad, as you know, from our mission, you know, from the community college into adult education, and ties into the schools. I think it's really hard to try to make something clear to particularly external folks, or even internal folks. A lot of people, when they come on staff council, are going, "Wow, I didn't know who did this, and I learned about this committee and that initiative over here." There's so much going on, and trying to convey that. I mean, you have a really big job. I mean, And I'm not sure it's really doable, in a sense, because a department, like you said, if people come back, cool, I get it, let's take this back to my department. They always come back to what affects them. And so when you're looking for something, or, Cornerstone, sure, if I look at the events calendar, and if it were truly used to its fullest extent, I wouldn't be able to find anything because it would be so full. I don't really know how you're going to feel like you've really got there,
mm-hmm.
because we're just by our nature, everybody's out doing their own thing. If just enforcing the logo, I think, is probably a major thing right there.
It is.
And I think I've seen some inroads in that in the last, 4 or 5 years, where it's people, we got to put that in there, and that we're an EEO employer, and, the kind of the boilerplate sort of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know how that's going to come out. But
when you asked the same question, actually, that the chancellor asked when we pitched this project to him, and
he didn't prompt me.
Pardon?
He didn't prompt me.
but he said, how are you going to do that when it's so broad, from the GED to PhD and all the things. I've done some reading on that since. I told the chancellor at that time that, we're doing it anyway. We're just guessing. So now the research at least helps inform the decision-making on what we do focus on, because we've got to focus on something in a 30-second commercial. What I've learned, though, in reading different books about differentiation is that all things to all people is not a differentiator. And that when we focus on our strengths, it rises all the boats, And so that's if people say you have a great engineering program, and that's really communicated and focused out there, then they assume that the other programs are quality as well. And if you think about other institutions across the nation, they're also pretty broad in their scope. Maybe not geographically,
right,
but
yeah.
They're pretty broad. And so they focus on some key things, too. It won't just be one particular program, however. You know, it's going to be what are we doing? So some of the themes that came out of our work were research and experience, the student's experience here being a unique one, research and place. You know, the place that we sit on the planet is uniquely differentiating. The people we serve, that's uniquely differentiating for UAF. So how we then develop that into both a brand strategy that gives everybody foundation and guidance about what we should be focusing on, and then the creative concept that comes out of that, we'll focus that even more narrowly, but capitalize on that strength in a way that's creative and bold and in a way that we haven't been telling our story because of lack of attention to it, lack of budget per se, for, you know, advertising and marketing as an institution as a whole. It's pretty decentralized, our advertising and marketing budgets, and so then you get constant barrage of different types of messages. And so having a centralized campaign is going to help us, I think, to just do a better job of telling Alaskans or telling the world what we do here. So you're right, we do a lot. It's just hard to focus on it all.
Well, thank you, Carla. I think with that, we'll wrap up this part and invite Carla again in a couple months to get an update on where the campaign is. And, yeah, thanks for coming.
If you decide to take the Brand IQ, you're welcome to fax it to me. I'd love to see your thoughts on where we are on some of these things.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So let's move on to committee reports. First off, I'd like to have a volunteer for the Chair of Staff Affairs. We have we don't have a chair for that committee right now, and it's an important committee, so if somebody would volunteer for the Chair of Staff Affairs. I think we talked about it last time as well, as somebody needing to step up to that because it's an important committee. I think Debbie is actually kind of taking on the role as the Chair of Advocacy right now. She's actually thinking about some of the staff affairs issues. There aren't a lot of issues on staff affairs plate right now, but we really do need a chair for that committee.
What do I need to pass on to finish this? Well, let me start with one of the questions that you have. Archival status?
Okay, we'll try again, but I'd like people to think about that because that is a committee that needs a chair and we need to get things done there. Rural Affairs, Brad, I know that you guys have been working on things.
Well, actually, we have not met this month, and so we'll have a next update for everyone next month. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 7th.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Walker, are you still online?
I am, and we have not met. Our January meeting was scheduled on a break day, so we didn't hit that one, but we do have a meeting coming up. It's it's on Monday, February 6th. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Walker. Debbie, are you still online?
Yes, I'm here.
I have avoided saying much about the Chancellor's Forum, thinking that you might want to do it here. So.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing that's going on. We have not met either. I think there's only three official people on our committee still. And hoping, haven't really set dates for meetings yet just because we're so small, and hoping maybe next time when we have our new membership there that we can get some more folks on all the committees, but ours as well. So I've been kind of trying to take some notes and stuff here. We have a lot of things coming up with dates between the strategic directions, listening sessions with the Chancellor's Forum opportunity, and anyway, I am hoping that folks will come to both of those, especially the staff forum. Encourage folks that might have questions to come. All staff, it's a great opportunity to get the voice heard and ask some questions, you know, possibly tough questions, but also find out what folks can do to participate more, and I don't know what else. And right now I'm working on the poster to send out for everybody for that Chancellor's Forum trying to do it on a sheet that can be cut in half just for, you know, conservation's sake to put out, and we should be able to get that out this afternoon, maybe with some quick meeting notes that people can share with their units.
Thanks, Debbie. Thanks so much for your work towards the Chancellor's Forum. I really appreciate you taking the lead on that, and I think that'll be a really nice event, and very much encourage everybody to attend that, and like your plug for the listening session as well. So thank you so much for your work on both advocacy and specifically with the forum.
Well, I haven't done that much. Nicole's probably actually done more on it than I have, but she's been helping get things set up for it. So just, again, want to encourage everybody to come and ask those questions.
Great. Thanks, Debbie. So now we'll move on to external statewide. Before we get into the SHCC committee, we need an alternate for that committee, please. We have three seats filled right now, and we need one alternate. So somebody interested in serving on SHCC who's not already on SHCC?
The healthcare committee?
Yes.
This is Debbie, yes.
Great. Thanks, Debbie.
We'll do it. I'm interested.
So to somebody from, I think, Carolyn, you might be the only one here from SHCC. Do you want to talk about?
I was not at the last meeting, so I don't really know what went on.
Okay. Maria or Kat, are you here? Okay. Moving on to Compensation Committee. We need one representative for the Compensation Committee. I don't think, Maria or Robert, are you online? Okay, yeah, I didn't hear either one of your voices. I wasn't sure if you had joined. I'd like a representative, or I'd like a representative to serve as an alternate. I think it's an alternate on the Compensation Committee.
Yeah. I'm willing to do that.
Great. Thanks, Brad.
Have they been very active lately? Since the budget went forth?
I don't. Have they met?
I think they've met once since then.
Okay, so we're going to move on. The only thing that I'd like to say about the external UAS committees is that we need two representatives. The idea is that everybody should be serving on one internal committee and one external committee. So if you're not finding yourself on either, both of those. Juella? Yeah. Yes.
I did want to report on the staff healthcare committee. They are expecting to. They've been kind of quiet for the last couple of months, but they're expecting to kick in because the vendor contracts are all expiring over the next year, and they're also expecting in March to get the actual impact to our paycheck. On July 1, you know, so for example, how much of an increase was there in the overall cost of healthcare to the university, and therefore how much of that will be translated to the employees? They also, at the Joint Healthcare Committee, the last Joint Healthcare Committee, they announced, statewide announced, the tobacco surcharge will go away, has gone away, will not be implemented in July 1, but at some point, and I don't believe they named a date. New employees will not hire a new employee that smokes, that admits to being a tobacco user, we'll put it that way. So the university will join the ranks of Providence Hospital and Alaska Airlines and hire non-tobacco users only. But I have not, as I said, heard a start date for that.
Thanks, Juella. So for external UAS committee reports, there are two important committees that we have right now that are not represented by staff, and those need to be filled. They both are related to things that happen in the Chancellor's office, and he has commented a couple of times now that we don't have representatives, so those two are the Chancellor Advisory Committee for the Naming of Campus Facilities and the People's Endowment Fund Committee. Those both were required to have staff representation, so I'd really, really like a representative for each of those, please. Claudia? Great, thank you. And who would like to
serve on the advisory committee for the naming of campus facilities. I don't think they're super active year round, but when something needs to get done, we need somebody. And I'm sorry, tell me your name.
Deborah Cox.
Thank you, Deborah. Great.
How do I find out when they meet?
Nicole can help with that. Now that she has your name, she'll provide those to the committees, and then they'll get back to you when. Okay. They haven't. Yeah. Okay. So I guess the endowment fund has not scheduled their next meeting, but they'll know that you're the representative. So, okay, thank you. Okay. Right, we're looking into whether that's actually functional right now, the SRC board. We're not clear as to whether we need somebody on that one, so Nicole's going to get confirmation, and we'll get back to you. This is helpful to have a kind of a start on these seats that are unfilled. I'm hoping that next in February, when we have orientation and can explain to new members a little bit better about what all of the committees do, we can finish filling those seats. But staff affairs is significant, so I'd like people to think about chairing that, because we need a chair for that. That's a significant responsibility. Ad hoc committee reports. We put the calendar committee on because the calendar's out and looks lovely. So Gary or Brad, or I don't think Sarah's here, do you want to say anything about the calendar?
If you find any mistakes, it's too late. Thanks to everyone. Thanks to the committee members and to Gary Newman and to Nicole for all their work. And I hope everyone likes the calendars.
Thank you for
if you don't have them yet, you should get them soon.
Yeah, thank you for all your work on that. They look great, and they are starting to go out the door.
How will they be coming to us, Brad?
Nicole is distributing them to reps. Is that right, Nicole?
I'll leave it up to you guys. I have some of them ready for reps, and some of them I just haven't had to get together yet. So I've contacted some of the reps, and I'll contact others. If you want them delivered directly to you as the rep, if you could send me an email by this afternoon, that would be very helpful. Otherwise, I'll put them in campus.
Okay. Let's see. I think the next agenda item would be Staff Appreciation Day, and I don't think Maria or Ashley are online, but I know we are all going to meet to talk about Staff Appreciation Day, I think, next week. And I don't think John's on for communication. Is that right, John? Or not John? Okay, no John. So we went a little bit longer than I thought we would, so if we want to stop the recording and do the roundtable discussion and let everybody have a chance to say something. Let's start with